Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 69. Narad visits Krishna's palaces. And we're starting with text 33, and we'll also do 34 and 35. Prastapana Upanayanai Prastapanopanayaner Prastapanopanayaner Apatyanam Mahotsavan Apatyanam Mahotsavan Apatyanam Mahotsavan Viksya Yogeshvarasya Yogeshvaresasya Viksya Yogeshvaresasya Viksya Yogeshvaresasya Yesham Loka Vishimire Yesham Loka Vishimire Yesham Loka Vishimire Pran Prastapano Panayaner Apatyanam Mahotsavan Viksha Yogeshvareshyaisya Yesham Loka Vishishmire Prastapanopanayaner Apatyanam Mahotsavan Vishishya Yogeshvareshasya Yesham Loka Vishishmire Prastapanopanayaner Apatyanam Mahotsavan Viksha Yogeshvareshasya Yesham Loka Vishishmire Matajis. Prastapano panayane Apatyanam Prastapana, with sending away. apanayanai, and bringing home. Apatyanam, of the children. Maha, great. Utsavan, holiday. Sorry, holiday celebrations. Viksha, seeing. Yoga Ishvara, of the matters of yoga. Ishashya, of the Supreme Master. Yesham, whose. Lokaha, the people. Vishishmire, were amazed. Translation. Narada observed how Sri Krishna, the master of all yoga masters, arranged to send away his daughters and son-in-laws, and also to receive them again, at the time of great holiday celebrations. All the citizens were astonished to see these celebrations. So there's two more verses. Yajantam sakalam devan vapi kratu bir urjitai purtayantam kachit dharmam kurparama matadibihi. Somewhere he was worshipping all the demigods with elaborate sacrifices, and elsewhere he was fulfilling his religious obligations by doing public welfare work, such as construction of wells, public parks and monasteries. Charantam rigayam kvapi ayam aruya saindavam natvam tatra pashun medyan paritam yadu pungavahai. In other places he was on a hunting expedition, mounted on his Sindhi horse and accompanied by most heroic of the Yadus. He was killing animals meant for offering in sacrifice. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, by His servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada comments, according to Vedic regulations, the Kshatriyas were allowed to kill prescribed animals on certain occasions, either to maintain peace in the forest or to offer the animals in the sacrificial fire. Kshatriyas are allowed to practice this killing art because they have to kill their enemies mercilessly to maintain peace in society. Omigan timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam tadati svabhadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sargajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Shavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhas Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this section of Srimad Bhagavatam is very instructive. A materialistic person cannot understand actually what's happening in this particular 10th canto. They take it to be fairy stories, something not real. But it's strange actually, everybody's attracted to fairy stories. You know, Walt Disney, I'm not advertising Walt Disney, but he was a great advocate of fairy tales on comic strip. What do you call these? Animation. Yeah, so, you know, they broke the records in the office, in the box office. He was making so much money, and people were flocking to see, you know, these pictures of something which actually we don't see in this world. Why? Because that's what we're attracted to. That's where the soul is. The soul's not in this world of so many external activities. The soul's rooted in the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so when there's a likeness to that, we're very much attracted. You know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. You know, it's a complete nonsense as far as materialistic civilization goes, but everybody likes it. Even the Prime Minister, in his private quarters, he'll switch on the cartoons or the fairy tales. But somehow or other, we, due to not being able to share these things by a selfish mentality, we become rooted in material concept of life. We want joy, but we want joy through our own activities. We are the controller. And therefore, automatically, what's that word? Prakshepatmika, the external energy of the Lord, this particular energy of the external potency, pushes us into a material conception of life. And anaravatnika, this covers us from our real identity. Therefore, we cannot understand what is actually happening in this particular pastime, although at heart we're actually attracted. So people cannot explain. But the explanation is, we want a life which is free from the miseries of material existence, where life's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And we get some inclination towards that when we see these animation films. So what is Krishna doing here? He's bringing the animation into the material world. He's giving us a chance to see what's actually happening in real terms, but in such a way that we can actually relate to it. So we're going to talk a little bit about relating to things in this particular class. It's very important for devotees to be able to do that. There's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam, prayers by Queen Kunti. She prays that what's that verse? Janma karma cha vishvatma ajak kartu atmanaha tiryan nishishu yadishu tadvidam vidambanam. So Queen Kunti is praying to Lord Krishna. It's amazing, it's bewildering how you actually take birth in this world, although you're transcendental to it, or how you're working in this world, like Sri Krishna seems to be doing here, but you know, you have no work to perform. You're appearing in different species of life. How is it? What would happen if the Supreme Lord appeared in this particular age as a tortoise or a fish, but in different incarnations the Lord's appearing like that? So this is Krishna's ability. He can appear as he wants. He's transcendental to this material manifestation, but he appears to show us how to perform duty. Is anybody free from duty in this room? Put your hands up. Who's free from duty? Who's swarat? Completely independent. So whether we like it or not, you know, we have some duty to perform. And so Krishna's showing us how to perform. He performs his duty. Why does he perform his duty? Why does he perform his duty? We said that word. We can relate to Krishna. First of all, we have to relate to this person. What's he doing? You know, in the Yadu dynasty, when the kings met Krishna, they were Shishupal, and the demons were blaspheming Krishna. Say, you don't have any caste. They were trying to discredit Krishna. But I see that's the situation, he doesn't have any caste. But for the purpose of preaching, he takes on this form as a Kshatriya in this particular instance. And so people relate to that, and then they can go further. What is actually happening here? I like the story, but it seems strange. The Supreme Personality of Godhead acting like a human being. So, Bhagavad Gita tells us that we can perform our duty. We all have a particular duty. Everybody has a particular propensity. But unless there's actually a commitment to performing that particular propensity, what do? We perform it when it's easy to perform, and when there's some difficulty, we change course. Let me try this now. And this is what Lord Krishna is teaching us, that whatever we do, even if we perform that particular activity perfectly, Bhagavad Gita says, sometimes we get that experience, don't we? Wow, I didn't know I could do this service. Or I didn't know I could do this. It's amazing. I've got so much talent. And then a few months down the road, we completely, you know, we don't want to do that service. So that's the nature of the material world, that we do what we're good at, what Krishna sanctions we should do, what the authority sanctions we could do, even though it becomes difficult. And then by performing that duty, gradually we have to apply ourselves. Difficulties come, and those difficulties help us to go deep into the heart and see what the problem is, and this is purifying. So in this particular instance, Krishna is very much teaching us that he performs his duty. Bhagavad Gita says that. If I didn't perform my duty, I don't have to perform that duty. But if I don't perform that duty, then everybody else will take that same line. We always follow the path of least resistance. Have you noticed? We have to be forced into situation. We have to be forced into purification. Otherwise we never get purified. So first thing is duty. Now a pure devotee, he doesn't have any duty to perform. And Prabhupada says a pure devotee, one definition is he chants 16 rounds and he follows four regulative principles. So this doesn't apply to us. If everybody's chanting 16 rounds, following four regulative principles, then, you know, we're free to serve Krishna as we want. No, we have to serve Krishna. This is a prerequisite for pure devotional service. We may not be actually on the pure platform. So duty is there. So Prabhupada said, human life, where does human life begin? It begins with the four orders of life and the caste system, Varnashram Dham. For this reason, anything outside that, even if it's got the title of religion, it means a person's not strictly following. He's applying it as and when he wants. But when we come under this heading of Varnashram Dham, it means we have a particular duty to do. And when we perform that duty, then it brings us to the path of devotional service. When in conjunction with devotional service, then it's very effective. Otherwise, we perform a duty and there's no real result. There's no purification. Is that right? We perform external activities, but how effective is it in purifying us? We may have that experience that we've been performing service for so many years and we don't really feel what we're supposed to feel according to Nectar of Devotion. You know, we can read up to the 17th chapter, but then it gets a little bit esoteric for us. But you know, Narada Muni is telling us that if we're not naughty, he says in the Bhagavatam, we're not naughty. I was not naughty. I heard very nicely. And within a very short time, he became purified. So it requires a little intelligence to apply ourselves to this process. Duty can also mean that we do things in an unconscious way. When Arjuna, he swore that he wouldn't give his Gandiva bow away. And anybody who indicated that he should give it away, he would kill. So he made that vow. He was so attached to that bow. And then in the battle of Kurukshetra, as he was fighting, because he was soft-hearted and attracted to many of the fighters on the other side, particularly Bhishma, Yudhisthira could understand that, you know, you are not actually fighting according to your full propensity. And at one point, Yudhisthira had to leave the battlefield, and he told Arjuna to carry on fighting. He'd been injured. So Arjuna, at the opportune moment, he left the battlefield and went to see Yudhisthira. And Yudhisthira thought, he must have killed Duryodhana, because they were in conflict at that time. And so he was very pleased. And he asked Arjuna, is Duryodhana finished? And Arjuna said, no, I just wanted to come to see how you were. And then Yudhisthira really blasphemed him. He says, you know, Maurice called him a eunuch. He said, you're not fit to have that Gandiva bow leaving the battlefield in this way. You should give it away. What to do? Kshatriya's duty is very difficult. He's made a vow. His elder brother, his lord of worship, is telling him he should give it away. So immediately, he starts to draw his sword. And by good fortune, Krishna's there. And Krishna says, wait. He said, I want you to listen to a story before you actually take any action. So they start to listen. Maybe you've heard this story about one Brahman. And is it the Brahman? That's right, yeah. The Brahman, he was Kushakrata, I think, or something like that, his name. And he was all very well known for being truthful. And so one day there was some pilgrims running by his hermitage. They were running from some dacoits. And he said to them, so what's happening? Why are you in such a rush? He says, there's some dacoits chasing us. We're running for our lives. Can you give us help? Tell us where to go for safety. He says, yes, go in that forest over there. They'll never find you. And so then a few minutes later, the dacoits came. And they asked the Brahman, where have those pilgrims gone? He says, they've gone in that forest over there. So we have to know how to apply duty. So in other words, then Arjuna understood that to do our duty requires great intelligence. Therefore in Bhagavad Gita, it tells us that, you know, especially in the beginning of devotional service, we need guidance. Are things black and white in this world, in devotional service? No, it's never black and white. It appears black and white on paper. And think, yeah, this is easy. But then when we try to do it, very difficult. There's always some situation. And so a devotee has to be experienced enough to see that. That we have to adjust this way, that way, take everything into consideration in the association of devotees, and then we can act. Prabhupada, sometimes when disciples asked him a question, he wouldn't answer straight away. And then later, after some consideration, he gave the answer. I mean, Prabhupada, he was linked to Lord Krishna. I mean, he could have given the answer straight away. But for our benefit, he was actually grave. Is that the word? Grave? Very thoughtful, deep. Thinking a thing out before we act. And also, on the other hand, we can be too attached to our duty. Is that right? Is there any way we can be too attached to our duty in devotional service? What do you think? You know, you're a good book distributor, 100 books a day, and you want to keep that service. Should you keep that service? Yes, you should definitely keep that service. But if the heart's attached in some way, maybe a change would do. It's like King Prachinabharishad. He wasn't a devotee, but he was in a devotee family. And Narada Muni saw what a state he was in. He thought, this is a devotee. He's in a devotee's family. This is the benefit of being born in a devotee family. We get a lot of mercy, even though we don't deserve it. And so Narada Muni understood his lineage, and he said, I've got to actually help him. Otherwise I'll never be able to face his ancestors. And what he was doing, he was attached to the duties of a king. He was going in the forest, he was shooting so many animals. He got so many wives. He got so many things that a Kshatriya should have. But the thing is, he was attached, and Narada Muni could see that. And so he started. He thought, "This is a king. I can't preach to him directly. It's just, you know, the ego's a little bit too big." And so he started giving the what is it? Not analogy. What's the word? Eh? Allegory. Allegory. He gave the allegory of King Puranjan, the one who lives in the body. And after some time, King Prachinabharishat was very intelligent. He could understand that, I see, this is meant for me. This is my situation. So yeah, we can be too attached to our particular duty also. So I wanted to expand on that a little. It's to do with preaching. That we have a certain duty in this movement, we have a certain duty to preach, is that right? Do we have a duty to preach? We have a duty to have the preaching mood. And so preaching is a very difficult task in the age of Kali. I was saying yesterday to some of the devotees how in the early 80s, late 70s, even maybe the early 90s, preaching was relatively easy. It was a manual task. You know, you just had to set somebody out, wind them up, give them a bag of books, give them a mantra, and away. And then, you know, they used to distribute books to people, and then people would actually come to the temple. And they'd start, you know, you would preach to them, and they'd start becoming interested. And then they'd shave up and they'd join the temple. This is what it was like in the 70s and 80s. And then at some point, when the 90s started, you know, the numbers started going down. We were still going out with the same books. Maybe it's the cover. We have to change the cover. Is that right? You know, styles are changing. People are attracted to styles. Change the cover. Still nobody's coming. The numbers are going down. What to do? Actually, changing the cover is part of the process. So then, there was hardly anybody in the temple. Not just one temple, but all over England. And then we looked further afield, met devotees from USA, same thing. Met devotees from Europe, same thing. What's happening? Does this process work? Why aren't people coming? What's happening? The things are changing, aren't they? The material world's in flux. We're not saying that we should stop book distribution. But maybe the approach has to be stopped. We was just on the course in the Wada Eco Village, Govardhan Eco Village, and there were quite a few points raised on this about how things are changing and we have to change with the times. You know, like book distribution. Should book distribution be changed? Maybe. Maybe we can carry on. Book distribution should be there, but there's ways to distribute books. Like, you know, we are so. I'm not saying we are. The general situation is that we're not keeping up with the times. That was one thing that was raised. Has anybody heard of online preaching? How many people are doing online preaching compared to, you know, direct preaching with the body? And it was mentioned that 50% of our preaching should be done online, because that's the way society is doing it. Other religious movements, the Christians, the Muslims, they're all actually well into the internet teaching and making many devotees. And we are way, way behind. So it requires some thought. So how to engage the condition? Actually, one story. There was one devotee from Slovakia. Does anybody know where Slovakia is? It's a country in Europe. He used to call it Czechoslovakia. But now things are being delegated. Now it's Czech and Slovakia. And this particular, he was a new devotee. He wasn't really necessarily following four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. He was a newcomer to the temple with a lot of enthusiasm, ability to work the internet, and some enthusiasm for interacting with society. So the leader there, he engaged him on the internet, preaching. And there were loads of devotees coming to, nobody was coming to the temple. But as soon as he started doing that, many people started coming to the temple, listening to the program, listening to the philosophy, taking up devotional service. And this devotee, eventually he had some difference over some insignificant thing and he almost left. He wasn't convinced about devotional service. So, you know, it's not just a matter of being, purity is the force. Is that right? We just have to be pure, Prabhu. You have to be pure. Like Prabhupada was pure. We have just purity. But no, we have to have, you know, intelligence and organization, as Prabhupada also said. So we just see the results of changing our focus. That's what it needs sometimes, isn't it? You know, the business world, they're so much into changing their focus every so often. You know, they have to change their website every 2 years because it's out of date. People are not interested. So, you know, we don't want to be left behind, do we? You know, we've got the most important thing to give. There was another thing, actually, I wanted to speak about, like interfacing with society. There was one article about how there are 10 different ways, or 10 things which are very prominent in whether a spiritual movement is successful or a failure. But this is coming from a materialist. Should we listen to this? Or should we just listen to the back? No, it's not in Bhagavatam. I was giving this class once, a few months ago, and everybody was like, what's he talking about? And then one question came up, I've never heard that in Srimad Bhagavatam. Maybe some people are thinking like that, even here. That, you know, we have to do our duty, we have to preach according to Srimad Bhagavatam. But, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam is very, very giving many ways in which we can do things. And the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is that everybody in the Srimad Bhagavatam are preaching. Is that right? If we analyze it, everybody's preaching to the reader. And look at the things they're doing. You know, Indra, he gets into so much difficulty, but it's in Bhagavatam. Narada Muni, he has to go this way, that way. So many ways to preach. It's in Bhagavatam. So there was one famous writer. He'd got a PhD in analyzing how religions develop and why they fail and why they succeed. And he came up. He actually managed to boil it down to 10 different points. So I can read those points to you if you want. It's just something we can take into consideration. One is conservation of culture. Conservation of culture. Eh? Yeah. So what does that mean? Conservation of culture. It's that in India it may not be so prominent, although it's becoming more prominent. It's becoming more and more westernized. When I first used to come to India, when I went to Vrindavan, there was just a dirt road going into Vrindavan. And the road you came on from Delhi was almost a dirt road all the way. But now what is it? It's a highway. There's almost a highway into Vrindavan. There's high-rise flats. So things are changing fast. So this is applicable to India as well. You know, at the moment, it may be that the culture is that, you know, I don't know whether it is a culture in India. Does the parents want their son to be a sadhu? What do you think? No. So things are changing fast. Many years ago, they wanted their sons to be sadhus. It was the highest activity. In Ireland, which is a country next to England, still, when you're distributing books there and talking to people, they're very proud that their sons are priests. It's the highest. So, you know, Ireland is actually overtaking India in piety, or India's dropping. So the culture out there is changing. And so conservation of culture means that we have to be able to relate to that culture. When we go out and meet people, they have to be, I can relate to this person. That's the first thing. Then that comes before even sowing a seed. If this person is just so far, just so, you know, way out that I can't even understand him, they don't even speak to you. I remember once I was going door to door. I was doing books, actually. And, you know, in England, you go door to door in the early days, in a door to door, you're like, it's just like something they've not seen before. And they got used to me after a while, but one particular door I went to, they had the guts to invite me in. They said, yeah, come in, let's have a comment. So I was talking to them, they were really nice people, actually. And after about, speaking to them for about half an hour, and after half an hour, there was like a sigh of relief. And she said, this Mataji said, oh, you're normal. So we want to be normal, at least in the eyes of the particular situation we're preaching in, not abnormal. So this is the first one. I don't know whether we have time for everyone, but at least we can make a start. The next one, if prophecy fails, so we should rely on Srimad Bhagavatam, preach from Bhagavatam. Don't start making prophecies about what's going to happen, you know, like there'll be a world war this or a world war that. You know, the Jehovah's Witnesses did that. The world was going to end in 1975, and it didn't. So it didn't have much for their preaching. There was one devotee in New Brindavan, he's a sannyasi now, he was telling us how in those days, you know, probably nearly 30 years ago, they got invited to a radio show. And at that time, in that part of the world, New Brindavan, there was a drought. There'd been a drought for 4 months. Not a drop of rain. And at the end of the interview, the radio interviewer, he said to the leader, he says, so I understand that, you know, you were talking about mystic power, that, you know, we have ability to take shelter of the Lord. And then, you know, we get all powers to do so many things. And he'd probably been reading a little backup reading as well. He says, can you make it rain? And the leader said, yes. And all the devotees went, oh no. And what happened is that they started a kirtan. And during this kirtan, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. And they had this kirtan for about an hour. And after the end of the kirtan, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. And so so then the phone rang. And the interviewer picked the phone up. And he says, it was a phone call from the meteorological office, from the weather station, in other words. And they got a report that there were black clouds forming on the horizon. And after half an hour it came, and it just rained all day. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. But it's risky business. We shouldn't, stick to Srimad. In this case, we can stick to Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the prediction in the Bhagavatam, we can see that they're actually coming through now. So this is the way we preach in that respect. No predictions. Medium tension, strictness. You know, when we first join the ashram, we may be really super strict, you know, but when we're strict with ourselves, but when we relate to society, we have to be very, very careful. We have to present the philosophy and the way of life in such a way that they can gradually acclimatise to it. In this respect, in Chaupati, things are working that way, that we see yoga students are coming, and they're being dealt with in such a way that, you know, they're not overawed with what they have to do. Too much information, too much to do straight away. Then they can go to the eco-village and gradually acclimatise to what they think is a spiritual way of life. And then as they become more acclimatised, then they can actually become acclimatised to real spiritual life. So like that, a devotee is not always aware that, you know, people are on a different platform. We have to gradually bring them to devotional service. It's called, what they call it, the induction funnel. This is something else we were talking about. The first is we plant the seeds. You know, how do we plant the seeds? In so many ways. People just become favourable to the devotee and the seed's planted in the heart. These people are nice. And then the seed can be... then there's some, you know, even planting seeds without meeting people, just by our activities. And then we have contact with society. And then they start to consider devotional service. They start to consider this and start to compare it to their life. And then there may be some transformation take place in the mind. Maybe this is a good thing. Maybe I should start following. And then they start to adopt the process very strictly. And then they take shelter of the disciplic succession. And then they actually become preachers. They become advocates of the... So this is a lot. So we see there's like seven different layers we have to go through before they actually start to take up devotional service. So Narada Muni knew that art. We have to learn from Narada Muni, little by little. So what did we get to? We got to the third one. Fourth one. There should be a legitimate authority in the movement. Prabhupada mentioned that point when he was writing to the GBC members. He said, you GBC members, you make sure that you are following... What did he tell them? You make sure you are following four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. That was his initial instruction. And you, when you're going around your area, you make sure everybody is following four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. Because if we're doing that, then we are setting the example. If we're doing that, then whatever we do is backed up by Krishna. Krishna can work through us. Without those things in place, however expert we may be in understanding, you know, the psychology of preaching or the different ways to preach, it'll just fall flat on its face at some point. Because then people, they're not stupid. They think, this philosophy is so high. These people are not following it. Next one, a religious labour force. Volunteer religious labour force. You know, we have to look at the... have we got a big volunteer religious labour force for preaching? Do we? You know, are they all the congregation preaching? Are all the congregation preaching minded? Because this is the future, isn't it? Few people in the temple previously have been doing all the preaching. But, you know, it'll remain, relatively speaking, less and less percentage of the whole devotees. The congregation will grow out there. And so where's the preaching going to come from? It comes from more devotees preaching from their particular situation. So, you know, the congregation has to learn to become volunteer preachers. Who's a good example of that? Why am I saying all this? It seems to be different from the actual purport. But Krishna's preaching. Krishna's adopting a certain situation in order to interface with the conditioned soul. So we're talking about that. So the Jehovah's Witnesses. I'll read some statistics. Would you like to hear some statistics? In Bhagavatam class. It's Jehovah's Witness. This was 53 million... Watchtower magazines distributed in 1 year. 51 million Awake magazines. 15 million study guides. That means 15 million... Well, it doesn't mean that. It means at least 15 million people started to take the process seriously. That's big preaching. Mormons. 215 million converts. That means baptizing. 215,000. They're not quite as energetic as the Jehovah's Witnesses. And he says, does anybody know what the Mormons are? You see them walking about in Western cities especially, maybe even in Bombay now. There's usually two of them, and they're dressed immaculately. You know, neat hair, suit, tie, a little card here tells you who they are. And they'll walk up to you. Hello there. My name is so-and-so elder. And this is so-and-so elder. And they, you know, they start preaching to people. It says that these people, for 2 years, before they can actually take up their duties in married life, they have to preach in a foreign country for 2 years. And it says that, I mean, this is, it's revolutionary, isn't it? What would we do if we asked all our members to do that? What do you think the result would be?
Forget it.
And then it says that every preacher makes 4 converts in each year. So each preacher makes 8 converts. So every one of the Jehovah's Witnesses has to do this. Say if there's 1,000 Jehovah's Witnesses, and everyone makes 8 in 2 years, so they make 4,000 converts per year. That's, you know, that's a 400% increase. Anyway, it's 9:15 now. Would you like to hear the other ones quickly? Adequate fertility. So this means that they give an example of the Amish, the Amish. They're a group of spiritual people who in America, and they don't preach, but they have a lot of kids, a lot of children. Each family has about 7 kids, and so it says they're growing like anything. So, you know, they've got this strategy in place. And then favourable ecology. This is a similar to one to the first one. You know, we have to create a situation where people are comfortable. Anyway, we can stop there. I think we've covered just about everything. Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. No question.